Hi, welcome to The Matchmaker Is In. I'm Karen Webster. Joining me today is economist and co-author of the best-selling book, Matchmakers, David Evans. David, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Karen. Always great to be here. How are you?
Doing well, surviving post-Halloween, and it is actually November the 1st. Hard to believe we're in the home stretch of 2016. Our guest today is Nate Hirsch. Nate is the CEO at FreeUp.com. Hey, Nate, thanks for joining David and me today.
David and Karen, thank you so much for having me.
So let me give our audience a little background. So we were chatting before the broadcast, and Nate, you're a serial entrepreneur. You started your e-commerce career in your dorm room on the Amazon Marketplace, multi-million dollar career there that you built. And that inspired you to create FreeUp with the extra E that stands for e-commerce, I understand, an online platform that matches businesses that need a remote workforce with qualified workers who can fill the gaps. So give us the scoop. Tell us more. FreeUp, how you devised the idea, and what it all means.
Yeah, so as I was telling you guys before, I started an Amazon store when I was in college to make some extra beer money on the side, and I ended up growing it into a multi-million dollar business with the help of a lot of really good hires. But along that process, I also made bad hires and made mistakes, and I was in my young 20s, and I didn't really know what I was doing running a business. And I kind of learned from those mistakes over the past 7 years to really refine a great interview, a great hiring recruitment process. And I thought that there was a way to share that with other businesses that may not have the processes or systems in place or who have made bad hires before, who have just gotten frustrated with hiring, and they try to do everything themselves, which in my opinion is the wrong way to go. So I took that into a second company, FreeUp, with the idea to be more hands-on and to give them more than just a marketplace where they post jobs and get all these applicants and interview them one by one and then have to make a decision themselves on who's good and who's bad and see how it plays out. Where on FreeUp, we get hundreds of applicants every week. We interview them. We have a great interview process that I created. We have communication guidelines, which in my opinion is very important, especially with remote workers. And then we make these workers available to our clients on a first-come, first-served basis. So our clients are getting pre-vetted workers. They're getting the top 1%. And then on the back end, we protect our workers because our turnover is so low. But we do protect our clients, because workers can quit at any time. So if our workers quit for any reason, we cover all retraining costs. We get them a new worker right away. And we make sure that they never take a step backwards for HR reasons, along with being very hands-on in the process. So that's really how FreeUp is different than all the other marketplaces out there.
And just a couple of follow-up questions on that. So are you focusing on any particular kind of workers in terms of skills or professions? And are you doing gigs or are you doing full-time employees too?
Sure. So we offer workers from $5 to $50 an hour, both U.S. and non-U.S. In terms of skill sets, we started off with just Amazon, but we expanded to a lot more than that. We do all the major marketplaces, Amazon, eBay, Walmart, Sears, all that, along with people that have their own website. And about 95% plus of our clients are e-commerce or somehow related to e-commerce. And then we also have those lawyers, doctors, real estate agents that also need remote workers that we fill stuff for as well. In terms of short-term and long-term, we have no minimum, so we do plenty of short-term gigs, but we have plenty of long-term contractors as well. We don't have any employees. They're all independent contractors, but it really just depends on the client. We have no minimums, no maximums, or anything like that.
So let me ask a question about the type of business and the type of help. So this goes back to what you observe to be a gap in the business that you were creating out of your dorm room for extra beer money. Where did you start? What was the set of problems that you felt was really holding you back from maximizing your potential as a seller on Amazon?
Sure. So a lot of business owners, they run into the issue of time. There's just not enough hours in the day. And if you're someone like me, I value my time very highly. So any second that I'm spending recruiting people or replacing people or scolding people or anything like that is just not worth the time, in my opinion. And I built FreeUp to what I wish I had when I was first hiring. I always wish there was a way for me to be like, hey, I need a top-notch Amazon guy. I'm willing to pay the $40 an hour or whatever it is. I just need to know that they're good. I can't find out 3 weeks later that they're not. And so I wanted that easy system. So when my clients come to FreeUp, they're like, hey, I need a top-notch guy. I know I'm giving them a top-notch guy. And if there's any issues on the back end or the worker disappears or makes any kind of bad decision, I have someone to go to, someone that's hands-on, that's going to help it, that's going to problem solve or fix it or get them someone new and cover the cost of doing that. So to me, that was important. And that was a major flaw that I think set me back as I was building the company initially.
Are there certain types of skills that your marketplace sellers look to you to provide them with more so than others? Is it graphic design? Is it SEO? Is it writing? What kinds of skills do you find to be most in demand?
Yeah, so we definitely do a lot of all that stuff. I mean, the most common skill has to do with listing and optimizing listings, anything with SEO keywords, because that's pretty common whether you're building your own website, selling on Amazon, or any other marketplace. So that's probably the most common. But, I mean, off of that, there's so many things that go hand in hand from handling the customer service. I mean, once you build these listings and you start getting sales, that just adds work to the table. You have customer service to do, or you want to run ads to get even more sales. So it all starts with listing products, and then it branches out from there.
So Nate, I'm curious to hear about how you are going about getting this off the ground. I have a lot of experience with job boards and how those kind of businesses get going. And as I understand your business, you're sort of a combination of a job board, but then adding in a lot of the interviewing and vetting services that a typical recruiter or sort of offline training, recruiting firm would do. So you're kind of combining those two business models. It strikes me that it's a tough ignition problem because you need to get sources of demand in addition to getting sources of supply, and I'm curious how you're going about solving that problem.
Yeah, so at the beginning, I definitely had a competitive advantage because I'd been selling for seven years. I had lots of remote workers that I had used either part-time or for one-time projects or even long-term and full-time. So I kind of had this core group of people that I ran the idea by. They always wanted more clients, so they were down to give it a shot, and they were really supportive. And honestly, without them, I couldn't have gotten it off the ground. So I had that initial group that I gave out to clients that I had a pretty good feeling my clients would like. And then from there, just gaining the traction, getting the positive feedback, which leads to more clients. And then from there, it's all supply and demand. I mean, you never want to have too many writers and not enough graphic designers, so you kind of try to have more supply than demand and recruit accordingly. But at the same time, you don't want to just take anyone in the door. You want to keep it at the top 1% and keep it in the best workers. So it has to do with what kind of applications we're getting. And that's kind of the constant struggle as we grow. But I have a great HR team, and they do a pretty good job recruiting. We haven't ran into too many issues where we just don't meet the demand unless it's just a very particular position that we would just never recruit for. And with that, I mean, we always go to the clients. We're pretty honest. And with their permission, we'll actually recruit for them. And they're welcome to post on other job boards and kind of do it at the same time. And if we find someone great for them, fantastic. If they find it on their own, no big deal. We don't charge the client for it.
And do you use the other job boards as a source of supply that you then vet?
Yeah, we post on all the major job boards, social media a lot. We also have a great referral program internally for our workers. So any workers that refer other workers, assuming they make it through the interview process, they get 25 cents for every hour that worker works forever. So it's a pretty good incentive to recommend people that are good, although we take that away if they start recommending low-quality candidates. So that's been pretty helpful in building people that are responsible and reliable, because you always want people that are referred and recommended over some random person who can disappear at the blink of an eye.
Sure.
It suggests that if you're taking the very, very top, the cream of the crop candidates, that in order to keep them on board, they have to be kept pretty busy. So how do you get the businesses on board so that all of your top 1% candidates have stuff to do?
Sure. So that's one of the beauties of FreeUp. We don't keep people so that they can't get other jobs outside of FreeUp. Our only request, and it's in their contract, is they can't drop our clients for their own. But if we're not getting them work and they've been at FreeUp for 2 weeks, they're welcome to go get a part-time and full-time job as long as the communication's there and they tell us. So we never run into a situation where a person signs on and they're like, you promised me 40 hours a week, but I only have 1 hour a week or anything like that, because we make it clear to them up front. It's all in the agreement, and we try to not have any tricks or guarantees like that. In terms of getting clients, I mean, that's kind of where we are now. We have a pretty good reputation in the industry just based on client feedback. Whenever you start a business, you never know what the client feedback's really going to be. Luckily, it's been overwhelmingly positive, so we use that to grow. We have a client referral program that operates very similar to the worker referral program. We are monitoring job boards and social media for people looking for VAs. We do have different marketing campaigns and stuff like that. And I started off the first few months just by doing cold emails and cold calls, just because I have a sales background, and that's kind of what you have to do to get any business off the ground.
What kinds of skills have you recently added to your worker portfolio that perhaps have been inspired by the changing nature of e-commerce? I mean, that's certainly a field that's, you know, even in the 7 years since you've started, there's an awful lot now that has changed to really create new opportunities and new tools, frankly, for workers and marketplaces to use. How are you accommodating that, and what kinds of things are you now offering that maybe you didn't when you started?
Yeah, so when we started, we were just Amazon, and we really used what clients were saying or requesting to help us recruit and add other skill sets to the table. I mean, even stuff like graphic design, I never really thought that we would get into when I first started this, but then I realized that the demand for graphic design, people to edit product pictures, is really across every marketplace. The other areas is the digital marketing, the click funnels, the social media ads, Google AdWords, stuff like that, that we're really starting to get into more and more as clients start to trust us and see us as less of an Amazon VA service and more of an overall e-commerce service.
So I don't know, Nate, whether you want to get into this, but I'd certainly be curious to hear a little bit about the secret sauce. I guess if it's really secret, you won't say anything about it. But it sounds like one important part of your business is figuring out a way to screen out employees and bubble up the ones that are really good. So I'm curious if you could tell us at least a little bit about how you go about doing that.
Definitely. So there's a few different parts of recruitment. You want someone that has a lot of experience, because we're not a new marketplace. We don't want to give our clients newbies or people who haven't been there when it's crunch time or anything like that. We want people with a past history of success, people with other references and other clients that can vouch for them. And then the most important thing to do is communication. So whenever workers go to hire and we put them through the vetting process, which is the proprietary part, which is the interview questions and the initial process, assuming they get through that, we have 15 pages of communication guidelines that I wrote myself that they have to memorize. And we test them on it. We take it very seriously. We kick people out of the network if they don't follow them. And to us, that's what makes us different than our competition, because you can have the most skilled person in the world. If you're always chasing them down or they don't give you updates, or they go missing, there's really no point in working with them. It's never going to be a good experience. So communication to me is the most important thing. And when you have workers with strong communication, they become very honest about what they can do and what they can't do, which avoids people getting hired for the wrong jobs or any kind of miscommunication down the line. So to me, our secret sauce is the communication guidelines and how seriously we take this.
And it sounds like that's particularly important for remote workers, which I gather is what you're primarily focused on.
Exactly. We're all remote workers. Like you said, even if you have someone sitting right next to you, communication is important, never mind someone on the other side of the country or world. So communication just becomes more and more important.
Have you noticed that you've had more supply to choose from? I mean, I think about the advent of the gig worker, and so many more individuals now are part of the freelance workforce. Has that affected the number of of candidates that you've had to pick from? Perhaps not necessarily the number of ones that you end up taking, but is the pool bigger these days?
Yeah, I definitely agree the pool is bigger. I mean, just even this year I noticed Facebook groups that were people trying to become VAs or work from home mom and dads or whatever it is just seem to be getting bigger and bigger. And I don't know if it's a combination of the economy or if it's just becoming more popular to work from home, but it's definitely increasing. Supply has never been a big issue for us. We keep our supply high on purpose. You always want to have more supply than demand in our industry. And I mean, there is, so we get so many applications and we try to keep it to the top 1%. But if we just take a week and have all our people go out and post jobs and go into different social media instead of doing interviews, we'll get more applicants than we can handle for the next month. So supply really hasn't been that much of an issue.
How do you make money?
Sure. So when we hire a worker, we have an agreed upon rate, and we essentially set a client rate and a worker rate right from the start. So the difference is a 15% or minimum of $2. Our lowest worker is $5 an hour. Our highest worker is $50 an hour. So we make our money on the difference between the client cost and the worker cost.
So the quote to the client includes your markup, right?
Correct. And I think one of the issues some marketplaces have had is that it's like, what side is the client, or what side is the fee on, the client side or the worker side? For us, I mean, we tell the clients, it doesn't really make a difference. We set the worker's rate, we set the client's rate. If you want to call it on either side, I mean, we're giving you one rate, and that's what it's going to cost per hour. All our workers are hourly, and we're pretty open and honest. I mean, we're a business, we're trying to make money, but we're also trying to provide a superior service. So we don't pretend to be the Walmart of workers by any means. We try to be the hands-on way to hire the top 1% for a market rate.
And who pays the worker? Are you acting as an intermediary so that the employer is paying you and then you're compensating the employee and taking the difference?
Correct. The client's not allowed to talk to the worker about price. The workers can only talk in terms of hours, so they get the hourly rate from me and the estimated hours from the worker, assuming it's a short-term project. And then essentially client always pays us. We always pay the worker and we make the difference, just like you said.
So are you bearing the financial risk of the employer not paying? Or
correct.
Is that
the worker's pay is guaranteed. We've ran into very few issues in it. We require our clients to keep a bank account or credit card information on file or put down a retainer. And if the retainer runs out, we pause the work until they fill it up. So, I mean, there's always going to be people that try to abuse the system and get out of it. And there have been small issues here and there, but it's almost like the cost of doing business. And as we get bigger and our software improves, that stuff should weed itself out anyway.
So Karen promised me that you've done some interesting things to make sure the employers, the demand side and the supply side, the employers and the workers behave themselves. So I'm curious hearing about what you've done, whether
sure.
It's behaving
so
themselves basically, you know, making sure they're creating value for the platform.
Yeah, so our clients sign an agreement just like our workers do. Inside that agreement is stuff like you can't talk about hourly price with our workers. The communication has to be in there. I mean, just like we shouldn't have to track our workers down, we shouldn't have to track our clients down either. There are times where workers need information from the clients in order to do a project. Stuff like it's not results driven. We don't have any commission-based workers. If you hire my worker for telemarketing, for example, if they do it for 10 hours and they don't get any results, like you still have to pay them. Just certain guidelines in there. We don't want to trick our clients. I feel like some marketplaces out there do trick their clients and they sign the terms and conditions, but they don't actually know what those terms and conditions are. We try to make it clear with our clients up front so that there's no issues down the line and we don't end up getting into disputes or anything like that. And the worker side is the same thing. Kind of going into the communication policies is estimated hours or quoting hours. For example, let's say a worker looks at a project from a client and they say, this is going to take me 10 hours. If they get to hour 10 and then they're like, oh, by the way, it's going to take me an extra 2 hours, to us that's not acceptable. When you got to hour 5, 6, 7, 8, that's when you're like, hey, you know what, this is taking a little longer. I want to, or it's going to take me 2 hours. Is that approved? And only with the client's approval can you work those hours. And our rule with our workers is your pay is guaranteed. If our client ditches us and we're out $1,000, you worked for $1,000, we're paying you. But if you work without approval from the client, if the client approves you for 5 hours and you go work 20 behind their back, that's not guaranteed. So stuff like that keeps the checks and balances. The clients are always getting approval before stuff gets done, so there's no surprises, and that really keeps both sides happy.
Are you venture-backed?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Are you venture-backed or are you bootstrapped today?
Got it. Yeah, not venture-backed. Both my businesses are bootstrapped.
Interesting. Are you looking for money?
Potentially. It depends. I mean, there's always a cost for getting money, so it just depends on what that cost is. I'm more interested in someone who could add money and add the strategic side. For example, our software is an area that I see we can improve, although I think it's pretty good for a one-year startup. So if I found the right person who was backing money and their software expertise, I could see that being a fit. And other than that, I'm willing to listen to offers on the table.
Interesting.
So where are you, Nate, in the process of growing the business? I would think of these businesses as taking a while to really get the positive feedback effects going between the two sides. Are you still at an early stage where you're trying to increase the client side and it sounds like maybe not the supply side so much, but have you gotten to the point where it's a self-generating process, or are you still kind of pushing things along?
Sure. So I think out of parts of the business being complete, I think the process is close but not finished in terms of the communication guidelines and the rules that the clients and workers follow and that kind of stuff. I think our software still needs to be improved. We're doing over $1 million a year in revenue for FreeUp. We're very profitable because there is not that much overhead. And, yeah, I mentioned the development side. The setup process and all that is the area that needs the most work at this point. I don't know if that answered your question.
So I think the question is, how close are you to hockey stick growth?
I think close. I think what we're missing right now is a little bit more on the marketing side and a little bit more on the software side. Users view the software and how reliable the company is. So no matter how much we have these reliable workers and they have a good experience, if the software isn't up to par, you're going to have some sort of issues or lack of reliability. So I think we're one good software upgrade away from really being on that fast growth track.
Interesting. A quick question before we sign off. We often like to ask matchmakers such as yourself where your inspiration came from. I mean, obviously, as an Amazon Marketplace seller, that was inspiring. But matchmakers more broadly, are there other platforms that you look at and take inspiration from, those that you think have done it well? And don't say Uber, because everybody does.
Aside no, from I actually Uber. Have a good one. And it's funny that you guys invited me on, because have you ever heard of Rover?
No.
So it's a dog walking matchmaking service that a good buddy of mine, his girlfriend, just started using, and I just signed up for last week. And I love the platform. I haven't walked any dogs yet, but it's kind of cool. It allows you to decide whether you want to house it or just take a dog for a walk every day. It matches you with dog owners within a few mile radius. And if you're a pet lover, I could see it growing in popularity among pet lovers or people that have the disposable income to pay someone $20 a day to walk their dog for 15 minutes. So. And I kind of like how their software is set up. I was telling one of my developers that I kind of want to mirror them a little bit. So that's one that I could see growing, and I was kind of intrigued when I saw that.
Well, and you got
to
love
it. I think for me to use it, my dog would have to have some kind of input into that.
Yeah, bringing some kind of income to the table.
Yeah, is there a rating system that dogs can provide? You know, you never know. Dogs have lots of capabilities. I don't know that they know how to quite use apps yet. Well, that's interesting. I guess the big question is, does Rover have vowels? Because of course, we like matchmakers that really dispense the vowels. But you're an exception. You have the extra vowel. So you either go from one extreme to the other. You have none or you have extra. So you're in the club.
I'm pretty sure they have vowels, but now after I get off the call, I'm going to go double check the spelling.
Okay, go double check. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. You made a lot of progress in just a year, and I think, you know, some of the things that you've put in place do provide some interesting. I don't know whether it's barriers to entry, but certainly the kinds of things that would make a business more confident in taking a worker from your platform. I mean, the vetting is important, and I think it's especially important with the remote workforce. Having hired a number of people myself like that, it's you never know. But if you stand in and really warrant the behavior of the worker, that makes a difference. Reputation is important.
Yeah, I mean, and just kind of taking client feedback, because everyone has their different opinions about freelancers and workers and platforms, and I feel like the best or the worst platforms ignore that feedback and focus on other things, where the best platforms kind of evolve to what the user wants. So that's a goal at least.
David, any other questions before we let Nate back to the job as CEO of FreeUp?
No, this has really been a great discussion. Really enjoyed hearing about the business, Nate, and lots of luck to you.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Yes, thanks, Nate. It's been a pleasure getting to know you and FreeUp. Don't be surprised if offers of money pour in, but hopefully that'll be welcome. It was great to get to know you and the business. As David said, thanks for your time, and thanks everyone who joined us today. We'll see you next Tuesday. Thanks again.